So today we are very happy to have Michael Dine visiting us from Santa Cruz. Well, Michael is very famous and he has done a lot of things from axions to supersymmetry. And I think he needs no introduction. And the topic that he will be telling us today is the axion cosmic strings and how it plays a role in the early universe. Michael.
Thank you. So first of all, thank you very much for having me. Again, all these words have a sort of different meaning now when everything is on Zoom, but I very much appreciate the opportunity to talk about this work. And I know a number of you have thought about issues closely related to this, so I'm looking forward to your comments. So I'm going to talk about axion cosmic strings. This is motivated initially, at least more than anything, by questions having to do with axion production of dark matter and the question of whether or not conventional calculations of the axion dark matter density might be modified as a result of cosmic strings. But it has me thinking about some more general issues, as you'll see. And this is work with several postdocs, Nicolas Fernandez, who's now at the University of Illinois, who was actually, when we started talking about this problem, a grad student at Santa Cruz, Akshay Galsasi, who's now at Pittsburgh. I think he's actually physically not at Pittsburgh yet, but you know, working at Pittsburgh. And Hiren Patel, who's at Santa Cruz. Let me just see. I'm not sure this will work. No. Okay. So axions have, of course, long been considered a promising dark matter candidate. And an interesting question in their cosmology has to do with the question of whether the Chaikin symmetry transition, symmetry breaking transition occurs before inflation or after. If before inflation, they're produced by the so-called, these axions are produced by the so-called misalignment mechanism, with the result depending on an essentially random parameter theta naught, the initial value of the angle theta, the axion angle theta within our present horizon. If the transition occurs after inflation in a hot universe, then the misalignment mechanism still contributes, but the initial angle varies by amounts of order 2 pi on Hubble scales, on scales of those Hubble scale of the time of the transition. And in this case, the dark matter density from misalignment is in principle computable, since one averages over angles in different domains of the universe. And as we were sort of talking in our kind of lunchtime conversation, I'm actually a fan of the pre-inflationary scenario generally, but today I'm going to focus largely on this post-inflation scenario and some of the issues it raises. So there's a sort of textbook calculation of the axion energy density, which literally you can find in, say, Kolben-Turner's textbook, which assumes that the axion begins to oscillate around the minimum of its potential at the point where the Hubble constant, the temperature such that the Hubble constant is equal to the axion mass at that temperature. So the Hubble constant at T oscillating oscillation is equal to the axion mass at T oscillation. And then the number of axions is of order this, the energy density in axions divided by the axion mass at that time. So the energy density behaves for small misalignment angles I've written here. Okay, and basically, again, just borrowed it from this textbook calculation. It's this initial oscillation angle, MA, the mass of the axion at temperature T divided by the axion mass at that oscillating temperature, and the ratio of the corresponding cube of the scale factor. Okay, and then in the case of the Pachequin transition after inflation, one averages over the misalignment angle. Okay, so there are a number of order one level of uncertainties in this computation, which I should say for a long time I didn't really view as terribly significant. So first of all, there's uncertainty as to the topological susceptibility chi. The chi is the second derivative of free energy at theta equals zero, okay, with respect to theta. And chi is known analytically only at a low and very high temperatures. And in the intermediate region, one can estimate chi by interpolating between these results. And there's been some This is not something I'll talk about today. This will be another talk. There's been some discussion based on simulations, which are actually sort of all over the map for Kai, suggesting that perhaps that might significantly affect estimates of the density. But if you just interpolate, you find that you don't seem to be too sensitive to how you interpolate that result. But this is certainly an order one level source of uncertainty in the density. Then there are Hubble scale variations of the axion field. So the axion field is at this time is not really constant. These are expected to contribute to the energy density an amount at least of order FA squared H squared, which is comparable to the assumed zero momentum contribution. So again, one has a sort of order one level possible uncertainty in the computation of the density. And then finally, there's the question of averaging over the potential or averaging over the initial theta, and that this does not take into account necessarily the nonlinearity of the axion equations. And here, topological objects such as strings and domain walls might enter. And as with the previous item, these are likely to produce at least order one modifications. Now, the question really at issue in this in the axion string discussion is: might any of these effects be more? And might any of these be order more than order one effects? Might there be some parameter, some large parameter, small parameter, if you like, that might affect these results? And there's a large literature exploring these questions, including analytic studies and quite sophisticated simulations. I'm not going to give. I started to write a list of references. It was so long, I didn't. I don't think there's too much point, but in our recent paper, you can see an extensive list of references. And here, cosmic strings have been a major focus. Okay. And what I'm going to argue today is that, in fact, each of these uncertainties do translate into order one, but not larger, uncertainties in the axion dark matter density. It would be desirable to reduce them, but their effects on estimates of the axion mass as a function of the dark matter density would be modest. And my principal focus today will be, in fact, on this last item, the possible role of cosmic strings, and also at the final stages, domain walls. So I won't say too much about the domain walls today. Okay. So in this sort of post-inflationary scenario, a linearized treatment of the axion field is not reliable, as A over FA varies. So this phase of the Pache-Quinn field, if you like, varies by 2 pi or more on Hubble scales. And allowing such variation, one expects to encounter Hubble scale closed loops for which the integral over the loop of A over FA around the loop, I should say, is 2 pi times an integer for some integer n. Okay, and if I think of shrinking that loop to smaller and smaller size, well, we have to find regions in which the modulus of the underlying complex scalar field vanishes, so-called cosmic strings. So to be a little more explicit, we can consider a theory with a complex field phi transforming under a spontaneously broken U1 symmetry as phi goes to the I alpha phi, with phi equals FA, an axion decay constant, plus fluctuations, typically some massive field, times e to the I A of X over FA, where A of X is the axion field, it's the fluctuations around, fluctuations around this expectation value. And such theories admit cosmic string solutions. Okay, so I'm writing here, I'm adopting polar coordinates cylindrical coordinates rather, thinking of the string being along the z-axis and writing phi as a function of rho, the distance from the z-axis, e to the I n phi, where phi is the polar angle. So, and here f of this function, f of rho, goes to zero as rho goes to zero. Okay, so in terms of this expression here, this reflects the fact that as we go to get to the string, the angle becomes ill-defined, or I should really say the angle here becomes ill-defined, so f should go to zero. And as rho goes to infinity, f goes to this expectation value of the field. Okay. And So it's not hard to write down solutions like this. And away from the string core, as we go outside the string. So think of this field sigma as having some mass m sigma. I'm thinking of distances that are large compared to the Compton wavelength of the sigma field. Okay, then away from the string core, the gradient of phi is equal to I times n over rho f a e to the I n phi hat. E to the I n phi times phi hat. I apologize, I have a little background noise. Hopefully it will pass in a moment. Okay. All right, so as a result of this, this fact that grad phi squared goes like n squared over rho squared f a squared, the energy stored in this configuration per unit length is logarithmically divergent. The ultraviolet cutoff on the divergence comes from the size of the string core, but the infrared cutoff, which is going to be the thing of interest to us, comes from the size, comes from physical considerations. Okay, so for example, for closed, roughly circular strings, the infrared cutoff would be provided by the string circumference. Okay, for a long string and anti-string, the string separation would provide the cutoff. Okay, so in a cosmic string network with order one string per Hubble volume, we would expect the cutoff to be of order one over h, okay, roughly of that order, and the effective tension of the string to be 2 pi fa squared, this axion decay constant, log fa over h, okay, and we'll call that 2 pi fa squared c, okay, and this parameter c, okay, which is log fa over h, is a number, say at the time of the QCD phase transition, of order 70 or so. Okay, so here I'm thinking of fa as being about 10 to the 12th GeV. So this is sort of the potential large parameter that people discuss in this problem. It is the possibility of enhancement of the axion density by powers of Xi, which gives rise to the interest in cosmic axion strings and domain walls in the early universe. Okay, so I'm going to sort of give some reasons why one might be a little skeptical about the Xi would play some role, and then we're going to sort of delve into this in greater detail. So first of all, this infrared divergence should be some kind of signal, okay, of something, or sort of kind of a warning. And generally, infrared divergences are signals that one must consider an effective action, including some low energy degrees of freedom. And in this case, what we have in mind is that we need to think of the collective coordinates that describe the string core. But we also have to think about axions with momentum less than the inverse core size, okay, where the cutoff defining the core is chosen arbitrarily, but presumably should be short compared to the physical infrared cutoff of the system. Okay. And for this to make sense, one of the things we'll ask or we'll demand is that we have a matching, that the behavior of the tail of the axion string solution matches the behavior of the axions of these low energy axions. Okay, so that they should behave in a similar way, in a way that matches, and we'll see that that's the case. Okay. Now, in fact, what we'll see is that the logarithmic enhancement of the axion energy density is indeed what is expected from considerations of Hubble scale variations of the phase of the Pache-Quinn fields and their subsequent cosmic evolution. Okay, and in this language, what we think of as cosmic strings, this dominant energy, in particular the dominant energy, this logarithmically enhanced energy of the string configuration is really just part of the set of fluctuations of the axion field that we would expect. So we're going to claim that there's no sort of surprise there. Now, for non-relativistic motion of the string, it's also straightforward to derive an effective action for the string core collective coordinates in the axion. Okay, this axion indeed exhibits this action indeed exhibits a cutoff dependent tension. It also yields an axion string coupling, which is not localized on the string. So the string is the axion field is really sourced by over a large region of space. Okay, as we'll see, in fact, this is like that. This story is like that for critical strings, but it is different than the sort of point source picture that's often used to think about at radiation from axion radiation from cosmic strings. Okay, and then finally, there's another point I'd like to mention. The axion is a compact field. Okay, so it's something which it's a phase of this field capital phi. Okay, and so as such, A over FA runs between 0 and 2 pi. Okay. And this suggests that there may be some sort of limit to how much low momentum axion can be. It's these low momentum axions, it's the low momentum end of the distribution that's responsible for the dark matter axions. In particular, it's the Hubble scale axions close to the time of the QCD phase transition that become the dark matter axions. Okay, so whether we can enhance that density is sort of the question at issue. Now, so two cases and corresponding expectations for axion radiation, just to give some feeling again for what you might think. So, you know, I'm not going to announce any results from big simulations here. I'm really going to try and think a little bit about these objects as objects. And so as objects in field theory, I'd like to think about two limiting cases and things one might expect. So the first is an adiabatic situation, a situation where the strings are moving slowly, okay? And in particular, let's think about a long parallel string and anti-string, okay? So one can think of the separation of the strings as a dynamical variable B of T, okay? And obtain an action for B. Okay, and one can demonstrate that starting from rest and well separated, the situation evolves first, at least in an adiabatic fashion. So what's going on here? Let's see if I can get my camera here to work. Is that one? Yeah. Let's see if I can get this to work. So I should have prepared a picture in the slides. But let me at least do this here. Let's see if this will work. So here I'm just considering a very simple sort of situation here where I have a string. What I mean by a string and anti-string or the axion field is oppositely oriented in these two cases, okay? So that at large distances, the axion field cancels out, okay? So B roughly acts as my infrared cutoff, okay? And I have a potential for B, which goes like the length of the string times FA squared, times a log FA times B. Okay, so I just wanted to sort of mention this as to illustrate a sort of simple situation. Okay, so I have a force, a 1/B force, attractive force that I should write it minus here, an attractive force between these two strings. They'll be drawn towards each other, initially slowly and then more rapidly. As they come closer and closer together, the axion fields, okay, between these two annihilate, they sort of gradually disappear, okay? And in this sort of adiabatic approximation, the energy in the axion field is largely converted into kinetic energy of B, okay? So that's sort of the situation I was describing here. Okay, so let's see if I can get back to my shared screen. Okay. So as I say here, the potential energy of the separated string is largely converted to kinetic energy at B, and little of it is converted into low momentum axions at this early stage. So as these strings come together, they'll move more rapidly, okay? But at that point, they're going to produce higher momentum axions that are not relevant to the dark matter problem, okay? And so that's sort of one picture of how such a system might develop. Okay. Now we could also have a discussion of circular strings, oval strings, other kinds of things. There are a range of possible behaviors. Okay. But one doesn't expect here, at least in the early stages of the motion, a large enhancement of the low energy axion spectrum. Okay. Now another extreme is if the strings are moving rapidly. So that could be, for example, as these strings are approaching each other and nearly annihilate through these long parallel strings. Okay. Here a sudden description. I'm making an analogy with things we do in quantum mechanics to describe becomes more appropriate. The axion field of the system on scale B of t is converted into axions of wavelength B inverse. So most of that field is just instantly transformed into radiation. With energy FA squared L, again, L is the string length, per change of B by every time B changes by a factor of E. Okay, so this case again suggests no accumulation of axions at small k, okay, that one expects to generate a distribution which is sort of uniform on a log scale in K. Okay. So we can explore this in a bit more precisely by thinking a little bit about collective coordinates and low momentum axions. So thinking a little bit about this effective action, okay, which again, I want to think about as an action describing some collective coordinates for the string and axion. So again, let's start by thinking about the Abelian-Higgs model, which doesn't suffer from this IR problem, okay? And in that case, I'm thinking of Nielsen-Olsen strings. And let me call Z the string direction again, and denote the transverse directions by X and Y, okay? And let me think of the classical solution as phi classical of XY, constant in Z. And now I'm gonna allow for slow variation of the transverse coordinates with z and t. So in other words, I'm going to consider displacements in the transverse directions described by x of t and z and y of t and z. So x perp of t z. Okay. And again, these slowly varying on this underlying scale of the theory, the mass of the, in this case, of the charge fields and the gauge bosons. Okay. So if I take phi of x, y, z, and t to be phi classical of little x minus capital X and little y minus capital Y, then from the partial t and partial z terms in the action, we get something that looks like integral dt dz partial x perp squared partial t minus partial x perp squared partial z times integral dx perp grad perp phi classical squared. Okay, so this is just a standard string action for the non-relativistic string action for the transverse coordinates of the string, okay, multiplied by our previous expression for the tension. Okay, so we literally have derived the string action in this case. And again, we have this expression, which is for our string solution is infrared divergent. Well, okay, but not in the case, I should say, I'm sorry, confusing myself here. Not for this Nielsen-Olsen string. For the Nielsen-Olsen string, this is finite. We have a perfectly fine string action here. Okay. For the axion string, things are different. Okay, the integral for the tension is now infrared divergent. Okay, so this expression here, this is this thing that went like 1/ρ². Okay. And now the problem is this sort of the slow variation of the axion field. Okay, and this is a signal again that we cannot treat the string by itself or the string collective coordinates as an independent entity. we need to consider the string, including axion excitations of momenta above some Wilsonian scale lambda, and the axion field with momenta below this cutoff. So I'll call that, I'm going to call this lambda W. I left out the subscript here. Okay. So our low energy action should include, as I say, both the excitations of the long string and the axions with momenta below some cutoff lambda. And we're going to choose lambda, think of lambda W as being some scale much less than this Pichet-Quinn scale and much greater than H, or I think at some points I called this FA. Okay. Now, for such a description to be sensible, the evolution of the axion distribution, some A of K, A of minus K, this correlator, should match above and below the cutoff. Okay, so let me talk a little bit about sort of what are naive expectations for the axion number density from Hubble scale variations. Okay, so to do this, I'm going to want to go to conformal coordinates. Okay, so the scale factor in a radiation dominated universe behaves as square root of T over T naught times R naught. Okay. And if I define a conformal time, which is essentially square root of T, 2 square root of TT naught R naught, or 2 square root of T naught R of tau, then the metric I can write is ds squared R of tau squared times d tau squared minus dx squared. And this is a convenient choice for describing the evolution of this distribution. So then if I write a Fourier transform of the axion field, A of x and tau, in terms of some D3k, 5k tau, then in this conformal frame, if we can neglect the potential, we have phi double dot of k and tau plus 2 over tau phi dot plus k squared phi equals 0. Okay, so we have a very simple equation for phi for this Fourier mode. Okay. And now we can look at various limits for k much less than 1 over tau, i.e. for modes outside the Hubble horizon, okay, then the system is overdamped, okay, things are roughly constant. For k much greater than 1 over tau, the system damps as 1 over tau, so it behaves like 5k tau naught times tau naught over tau cosine of k tau. Now, to compute the energy density, we need to make some assumption about the mean value of phi of k and tau naught. Okay, so tau naught some initial time. And I'm going to take phi of k tau naught, phi dagger of k tau naught, or phi to be k prime tau naught, rather, to be j of k, k prime, delta of k minus k prime. And I'll take that to be fa squared over k cubed, delta of k minus k prime. Okay, and we'll see that what that does is it gives that the expectation, the mean value of di phi, dj phi initially, okay, goes like fa squared h. So I'm going to call a the initial time or the initial Hubble constant hpq for Pichet-Quinn. Okay, so this gives that di phi, dj phi, gij is fi squared h squared pq, which is sort of what you expect for the initial distribution. Expect that initially you have momenta of order or variations of the phase on scales that of order the Hubble constant. Okay, so with this choice, if we consider again k greater than tau, these modes start to oscillate when k is equal to tau of k and damp as 1 over tau squared, as we saw. So the corresponding contribution to the energy density is Fa squared H squared log lambda over H. In other words, these momenta scales large compared to H, okay, contribute just like the axion tail of the string. Okay, so again, we get this log behavior. Okay, lambda is now this Wilsonian cutoff, whatever it might be. Okay, H is the Hubble constant. Okay, now if the bulk of this energy were converted into low momentum axions, okay, it is conceivable that these could be the dominant source of axion dark matter. Okay, And we can sort of parameterize that in the following way. If I write A of k, A of minus k is FA squared HQ plus 1 over k to the 4 plus q delta of k, okay, then the axion energy density behaves like integral dk over k cubed FA squared H squared H to the q minus 1. And what we've basically been arguing here, and the issue is q greater than 1, less than 1, or equal to 1? So far, we're saying that sort of naturally q is of order, q is equal to 1. If q were greater than 1, we'd have an accumulation, some accumulation of axions at low momentum and an enhancement of the axion dark matter density. So I've sort of indicated here the corresponding number density it goes like dk times c over k to the q plus 1. And again, for q greater than 1, there's the potential for significant contribution to the density at low momentum. Okay, our adiabatic and sudden approximations suggest that the low momentum part of this c, I should say, really, we should probably allow the possibility that c is itself slowly varying with momentum. And what our arguments about the adiabatic and sudden approximation suggest is that q is less than 1 at low momentum. Or perhaps should say q less than or equal to 1. Okay. Now, I mentioned also the issue of the fact that the axion is a compact field and that might have some implications. Okay, and let's think a little bit what these might be. So the fact that the axion is a compact field, as I say, suggests that there's a limit to the density of low momentum axions. With phi to Pache Quinn field again, outside the string core, we have phi of x is fa e to the I a of x over fa, okay? And if there's order one string per unit volume, then almost everywhere phi, per Hubble volume, then almost everywhere phi takes this form. In other words, if I think about partial I phi, partial j phi, is fa squared, this is sort of a border fa squared k squared, where k is some momentum typical of the distribution. Okay, so I should phrase this a little better. Okay, so if we think about, so what is sort of the Kibble argument for the appearance of topological objects such as strings? It's that on Hubble scales, you expect sort of order one variations of the phase of the field phi. So what we expect is partial I, partial j, phi is of order h squared fa squared. Okay, so its phase is kind of sort of that order. And roughly speaking, that means that on that scale, we might expect that there's kind of a 2 pi variation in that phase. Okay, so and that translates into a statement about the derivatives of A. So we don't really expect that A varies more than 2 pi FA. Now, actually, in a recent paper of Gorgetto, Hardy, and Nicolescu, this observation is criticized with the comment. Recently, it has been claimed that this cannot be true because the compactness of the axion field bounds the energy that can be stored in low momentum modes. In fact, the periodicity of the axion only affects the zero mode. All the other modes can be populated by arbitrarily large amplitudes. So I think it's perhaps worth elaborating a little bit the argument, this kind of simple-minded argument here that, well, it says, you don't expect this phase to vary by much more than 2 pi over a Hubble region. Okay, so I should say, by the way, that the statement about the zero modes is certainly true that if A of X is a constant, A of X can't be larger than 2 pi FA, but that's not really what the issue is. So the argument I should say that we're making is somewhat softer. Okay, it's weaker, but I still think it's sort of hard to get around. So let's suppose in particular that the mean value of the distribution of A of K, A of minus, oh, I'm sorry, the mean value over some distribution of A of K, A of minus K is equal to FA squared H squared times Q minus one. This is for Q not equal to one. C H to the cube minus one over K to the four plus Q. Okay, so Q equals one again is the what we sort of are thinking about as the as the kind of standard case, the kind of log distribution corresponding to the log distribution with of K with energy density, of energy density with K rather. And here we're allowing for the possibility that Q, in particular, we're interested in the possibility that Q is greater than one. So we have some pile up at low momentum. Okay. And the normalization here, this this factor of Xi, which appears here. So Xi is again this log FA squared over H squared, that appears from the requirement that the energy density, the total energy density integrated over K should be FA squared H squared times this log. So the energy density we started with in the string, okay, is somehow being redistributed in K, but we're requiring that we maintain that same energy distribution. Okay, so for this mean value of this A of K, A of minus K, we can think of this as arising from a Gaussian distribution, or if you like, I'm going to model this as coming from a Gaussian distribution for the axion field, which is this Gaussian factor times this this same delta. Okay, so this correlator here. Okay, and I allow a source so I can perform various computations. And in particular, in addition to computing the mean value, which is what I wrote before, we can compute the correlator phi of x, phi of zero. Okay, so this is FA squared e to the I A of x over FA, e to the I A of zero over FA. And taking J of x, instead of J of K here, J of X to be I delta of X minus X prime minus I delta of X prime. So this is this correlator. So this is the kind of trick we're used to doing in path integrals. So that's kind of why I've written it this way. And this delta of X, this correlator of X, is the Fourier transform of delta of K. And it's something I want to stress mainly here that goes like H to the one plus Q, X to the one plus Q. Okay, with some power of FA squared. Okay, so remember this is valid for Q not equal to one. If Q is greater than one, this is something that this corresponds to something that varies rapidly over with X. Okay, so this pile up of low momentum axions, if you like, leads to a rapid variation of X with X. And so in particular, if I look at this 5x, 5, 0, this goes like FA squared e to the q minus 1, c to the q plus 1, c h to the q plus 1, x to the q plus 1. Okay. So in particular, for q greater than 1, phi changes by amounts of order e to the c when x changes by amounts of order h. Okay. So basically what the issue is that this kind of violates the initial assumption that phi, the phase of phi, is varying on Hubble scales. It's varying more rapidly by amounts of order xi. Okay, so many times. Now, what could that mean? Okay, that could have a reasonable interpretation in that it could tell you that there are of order xi or some power of xi strings per Hubble volume. Okay, but if that's the case, then as I'll explain a little bit, this doesn't translate into an enhanced low distribution density of low momentum axions. In particular, the infrared cutoff is scaled by the separation of the strings. Okay, so the infrared cutoff, which on the system, the physical infrared cutoff, is scaled by the separation of the strings, which in this case is decreasing like a power of xi. Okay, and so the momenta, the typical momentum of the lowest momentum axions, is not is not h, but is h times some power of some power of xi. So again, this is not translating if this large number of strings, which is claimed to be seen in some simulations, is not doesn't translate into a larger density of low momentum axions. Okay, so that's what I sort of say here. Okay, so let me sort of turn. Let's see how we do. Yeah, we're okay for time. Okay, so. So I want to turn now, I want to go back to this collective coordinate analysis I did and talk a little bit about radiation from strings and the coupling of string collective modes to axions. And in particular, I want to sort of think how this relates to those, that the sort of simple-minded adiabatic and sudden approximation pictures I described earlier. Okay. So we've seen that the system can be described by an effective theory consisting of strings and axions, where the string is essentially the core out to some distance 1 over lambda w, and the axion field includes only momenta below a matching scale lambda w. Okay, we can derive an expression for the coupling of the string collective modes to the axion fields by taking phi to be this, what we took it to be before, phi of x, phi naught, the classical solution of x perp minus x naught perp, times e to the I times this the physical axion field A of z, t, and x perp over Fa. Okay, so again, x perp is x and y, or in cylindrical coordinates rho and phi. Okay, so if I plug this expression into the axion, into the action rather, so I plug this into integral dz dt d2x perp d mu phi star d mu phi, and I'm focusing here on the zero on the time and z derivatives, okay, then I get then here I've taken the time derivative. The time derivative gives me a piece which is di phi x perp dot, okay, so that's, so I got terms like that before when I derived the leading terms in the string action, okay? But then there, I can also take one of those derivatives to act on this phase, okay? So I have d0a, okay? And this di, I'm sorry, I misspoke before. No, I did. Yes, I did. Okay, there's a confusion of different phis here. Okay, so this capital phi and the little phi, okay, and when I I apologize. Let me write something here. Okay, so when I write d zero phi, so I have some d zero phi, this is d zero, this phi zero, which looks like Fa e to the I times the angle phi, and then we have plus I times A. Okay, now, but the angle phi depends on these transverse oscillations. Okay, so d zero phi, this d zero little phi includes a di times little phi times x I dot, the string coordinate, right? And di phi is epsilon I j, in terms of this x and y, is epsilon I j x j over x perp squared. So I have to allow for the fact as the string oscillates, as the string now oscillates, okay, this phi changes, okay, and I have to allow for that, okay, and so that's what I'm trying to write in these equations here. So let me go back to my shared screen. Okay. So this little di phi here is this xi over x perp squared, okay. And I have the phi star is actually just an FA. That's sort of a stray, I apologize. And then we have this D0A over FA, okay? So we get this cross term, Okay, this is like a source for the axion field, okay, due to the transverse motion of the string. Okay. All right. So I've written this here again here. Okay. So I've written both coupling here. This is this epsilon ij that I wrote before, xj over x perp squared times d alpha xi, d alpha a. So here alpha run are zero and z. Okay. Okay. And this is a source for the axion field. Okay. And because of the infrared behavior of the system, this string is not, the string is not simply a localized source for the axion. So the axion is being produced by this whole by this whole region around the string support with where the background axion field has support. That's this 1 over x perp squared here. Okay. And now you might say, okay, what am I talking about here? Because if I integrate by parts, okay, then I have the d alpha squared x perp. And you might say, oh, but that's, isn't that zero by the string equations? But it's not. If I think about, for example, that long string and anti-string, remember they experience an attractive force. So the transverse motion in that case for the picture I drew is the motion of that coordinate B that separates the strings. And that experiences an acceleration, it experiences a force. Okay. So basically this represents the fact that the axion, the part of that axion field is convert around the strings is converted not into the kinetic energy of B, but is converted into axion radiation. And in the more sudden picture, all of that, or almost all of that, is converted into radiation. Okay, and many of the calculations which use which attempt to analytically, for example, to understand this radiation miss this. Now, one thing I'm currently looking at is. And there's another context where these sorts of strings arise, which is D1 brains in fundamental string theory. So in particular 2B theory, for example, where such strings are sources for a Ramond-Ramond 2 form gauge field, which is an axion. Okay. So in fundamental string theory, people sort of deal with these kinds of strings as well. And you could ask, do you see these features? Okay. And as I say, many of the features discussed here in field theory are reproduced in the D1 brain case. Indeed, one can make parallel analyses in field theory and string theory. And here I'm just going to take advantage of the fact that some features of the axion are more simply understood in terms of the behavior of an anti-symmetric tensor field B mu nu to which is its equivalent. And this is some work in progress with a graduate student, Shizhan Sun. Okay. So just first of all, just to remind you or tell you about how one can describe an antisymmetric tensor field, an axion is an antisymmetric tensor field. Here, one has a two index field, B nu rho, B is antisymmetric. If you count in four dimensions, B nu rho has one degree of freedom. Okay, a massless such field has one degree of freedom. There's corresponding field strength with three indices, which I've written here, and H is related to the axion field to the scalar through this relation. H mu nu rho is epsilon mu nu rho sigma d sigma A. Okay, so again, this is at some level just accounting. You can also understand this by thinking about the gauge symmetry. There's a unformed gauge symmetry or a gauge transformation in terms of a field, a gauge transformation parameter with one index involving this object B. Okay, this three index field strength in the presence of string is satisfies an equation partial mu h mu nu rho is j nu rho, okay, where j nu rho is a delta function valued along the string, okay, partial x mu partial sigma alpha partial x nu partial sigma beta epsilon alpha beta, okay, where epsilon alpha beta is a is a two-index anti-symmetric Levi-Civita symbol. Okay. So again, for a long string, we can take x3 equals z and x0 equals t. Okay. And correspondingly, sigma 0, these world sheet coordinates sigma 0 are t and z. Okay. And then partial I h I 0 z is delta of x perp. Okay. And also di by this duality h I 0 z is epsilon I j 0 z. I'll be a little sloppy about upstairs and downstairs indices here. Partial I partial j a. Okay. And that's delta 2 x perp. Okay. And this is indeed solved by A is equal to FA times theta. I think the theta I called phi before, apologies. Theta is the angle again in cylindrical coordinates. And you can see this by applying Stokes' theorem. Okay, if I integrate D2 sigma Z hat del cross A, this is integral D2 sigma epsilon 3ij partial I partial JA. This is integral DL dot grad A, which is the change in this angle as I go around the string. Okay. In this language, we understand the infrared divergence again in terms of sort of a thickening of the string. Okay. So for a long straight string along the z-axis, we can consider small fluctuations in the transverse directions xi. Okay, so for in particular B0I, okay, has a source which looks like DXIT, okay, and the Green's function in this two-dimensional geometry is log of X perp. So roughly speaking, B0I is log X perp, partial XI, partial T. BZI is log of X perp, partial XI, partial Z. And so if I compute, for example, H0ij and substitute back into the action, I get that the action is integral D2x perp, 1 over x perp squared, okay, integral dt dz, partial xi partial t squared minus partial xi partial z squared. Okay, so again, what we're seeing is this kind of thickened string. Okay, the string, we have a string action, but spread out over this distance, over x perp as 1 over x perp squared. Okay, and again, we see again this logarithmic behavior. Okay, so the string, as I say, looks to be spread out in the transverse directions. Okay, and it's this idea is particularly sharp if we think in terms of a Wilsonian action where we integrate out short distance modes of B mu nu down to some scale lambda w minus 1. Okay. So again, we see the origin of the infrared divergence in terms of this long-range axion field, okay? And we see our result, and we can also understand our result for axion radiation, as I'll do now, okay? So to think about axion radiation, okay, I'm gonna look at the term in the action, which is hzij squared minus h0ij squared, okay? And for, in particular, hzij, okay, by the duality is d0a, okay, but also in terms of the bzj, bzj had a partial xj partial t, okay, and this Green's function of x perp, okay, and then I have to differentiate once to get h to get this field strength. Okay, so I have two terms here. I have something that involves the axion field, the thing whose radiation I'm trying to understand. Okay, and the background field due to the string, okay, where that field is changing, okay, due to the transverse motion of the string. Okay, so there's a cross term when I write in the action in this hzij squared, okay, which involves d0a xj over x perp squared epsilon ij, okay? And this is what we encountered before. This is what we encountered in the collective coordinate discussion, okay? But again, what we see is the axion is field is sourced throughout space, okay? And for example, in the case of our string and anti-string approaching each other, the relevant bulk fields here lie in the region near the strings, and that region in between the strings where I, which I was kind of drawing with those circles before. Okay, so, all right, so what do I want to conclude from all this? Okay, so as I say, there's been a long-running debate about whether cosmic strings, axion cosmic strings, play an important role in the determination of the axion dark matter density. Okay, and because these strings have a logarithmically enhanced tension and a logarithmically enhanced energy per unit length, there's the possibility that they produce an enhanced contribution to the axion dark matter density. And this would lead to a different relation, for example, between axion mass and dark matter than otherwise, okay, and has implications for experiments. Lattice simulations, as I mentioned, are extensive and are argued to provide evidence both for and against this possibility. As we stressed here, though, in order that these configurations be important, it is critical that they deposit when they decay or annihilate in order one fraction of their energy and Hubble scale momentum. Okay, so I've given some arguments that that doesn't happen. Okay, so they've argued that the compactness of the axion field bounds the energy density of Hubble scale axions by roughly FA squared, H squared. Okay, and by itself, this would make it hard to understand an enhancement of the energy density over the standard computation by large amounts. We've also stressed that axion strings, due to their infrared divergent tension, need to be carefully defined. In particular, we have focused on a low energy effective action consisting of axions with momentum below some cutoff K naught, or lambda W, I should have said, and string collector coordinates for strings defined by in space by cutoff in space of order that cutoff. And we've seen that in a sharp sense, the string is a thickened object with thickness of this order. And the axion energy density, axion radiation is emitted from throughout this thickened string. Now, by studying the low momentum axion system in the conformal frame, we've seen that there's a natural matching of the low energy density, low energy axion energy density to the string. Okay. We also considered two extremes, adiabatic and sudden motion of the strings, and indicates that one does not expect to see an appreciable enhancement of low momentum axion production. Okay, this still leaves us with several sources of order one uncertainty in the axion dark matter density. Okay, things like the limited knowledge of the QCD free energy and imperfect knowledge of the low energy axion distribution. Okay, and both of these require simulations. But again, I think I'm skeptical, as I've indicated, that there can be a large parametric enhancement of the density. I should mention also, since a number of you on attending this have thought about issues of other issues, in particular electromagnetic properties of strings and things like the possibility of superconducting axion strings, that there are interesting questions you can ask there as well. For example, in the case of an axion string coupled to a Nielsen-Olson string coupled to an additional massless gauge field, you can ask what's the story with sort of this sort of spreading here? There is also a sort of interesting infrared behavior here, and it's something on which I have thoughts, but not a complete picture. Okay, so I think with that, I'm going to thank you very much for your attention, and I certainly welcome questions and I'll conclude there. And I will stop my share so I can look at you. And I will also get rid of this.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Okay, actually, I'm going to put Marco on the spot right away because Marco is on the call. Marco Gorghetto. So, sorry, oh, okay. Marco. And okay. I mean, if you want, you can disappear, but...
I'm a spectator.
Yes, I know you're a spectator, but sorry, you're there.
Anyway, hello, where are you joining us from?
Hello, I'm in Israel now, in Weizmann.
Okay, so you're at Weizmann at the moment, or are you? Okay. Good. All right. Well, you're welcome you're welcome to dump on me. That's fine.
No, I'm just a spectator. I'm not in brain matter.
No, but well, you were on the Zoom call, Marco. I mean, your name was mentioned on the slides. But I mean, it is true that you guys have seen something slightly different than what Michael is saying, and it may amount to what with the issues with the compactness of the axion. So do you guys have any thoughts? Are you looking into it? Is the uncertainty large enough?
I didn't understand the answer about the compactness.
Shall we just stop recording and we can
Yeah, actually, it may be better to do that.